Blog Talk Radio.
And tonight, we are asking the usual questions. And one of the things we are saying is you can't take the president for his word or any candidate. For example, this whole fake news around tariffs and international trade agreements. And tonight, we're going to talk about what this really means. We first want to urge everyone to save Mamiya. We want you to go to Philadelphia on March 27th, and if you go to the Mamiya website, mamiyainfo.com, you will be able to find out all the information and the buses that are leaving. We must save Mamiya. Secondly, March 24th, Saturday at Hollywood Episcopal Church, 715 West 179th Street in New York City, from 5 to 9 p.m., we will celebrate one of the most prestigious political prisoner support organizations, and I'm referring to the Jericho National Political Prisoner Organization. If you want to hear Pam Africa, she'll be there. If you want to hear Brother Jihad, he'll be there. So think in terms of March 24th. And there are lots of things happening in March, but without further ado, we want to recognize that the house is packed tonight, and we've got some special guests. So Brother Ralph, are you in the house?
Thank you, Sister Betty. I am in the house. What I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others Wake up, now is the time. And now, as every week progresses, there is so much to talk about and so little time to talk about it. And I say to you, my brothers and sisters, we are in great danger now. And I say that because I'm reminded of what Malcolm X said many years ago. We have been bamboozled. The American public has been bamboozled, as well as Black America has been bamboozled. They tell us what the issues are in spite of reality. And when they are able to do that, in spite of Facebook and in spite of our other means of communication, we are stuck on the foolish idea that the Russians are involved in American politics, or that whatever anybody is involved in, the American politicians already were there and made it worse. And I copied down a statement in the media about this problem, and I read it to you. The Russians are in an attempt to spread mistrust of politicians and the American political system. I can't read that without laughing. Mistrust of the politicians and the American political system. Now, Brother Tom Syracuse is going to break that down later on in the program in terms of numbers of actuality, reality in New York City. But the question is, do people believe that? And is it serious that is America an exceptional place where they're able to involve themselves in other people's political systems, but other people cannot involve themselves in American political system? That's American exceptionalism. And when you have exceptionalism, that means I can do it to you, but you can't do it to me. We are in trouble. And the American political system is going in that direction, or has been going into that direction ever since there was an American, but it's going at a faster speed. And that means they can tell us who to hate, who to love, who to kill, who not to kill, and they are doing that. There was a time when it was okay to enslave and then kill Africans in America. There was a time it was okay and acceptable to kill the indigenous people here, the American Indian. There's a time when it is okay to kill and imprison communists. And now we are approaching the time when it is okay to kill and imprison anyone who resists on any level. Resistance is called terrorism, and they are selling that to the American public. They're able to sell that. And it is hard for me. And I'm going to read it one more time. The Russians are involved in an attempt to spread mistrust of politicians and the American political system. And Mr. Trump were saying, gee, can we trust what he says? Well, I remind people of Mr. Obama, Mr. Hope and Change, who said, single-payer health care. And everyone went for it because it was 65 to 70% of the people in America wanted single-payer health care. He promised it and got elected. Where is the single-payer health care? Ask the teachers in West Virginia who are on strike. And I remind you that it was not a union. The union was merely a part of a people's movement to say no more. And so two things happen. What institutions can we depend on? None is the answer. We must depend on information. We must depend on people's resistance to oppression when they understand the reality of their lives. And I've been given the hook once again, and so I turn the program back to Sister Betty Davis. Keep these things in mind. Keep Brother Tom Syracuse in mind. Internalize the facts that he's going to present. Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. This is a show that tries to make people see reality. So that's why we do a lot of repeating here, and we try to do it slowly so that you can hear us and try to remember. Remember, this is an anatomy of oppression, which requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism. It requires an anatomy of the American capitalist system, and that's why we are boring you by mentioning the tariff and the trade agreements. Without further ado, I want to introduce the next panelist, and you know him very well, Brother Larry Pinkney. What you should understand is man was a political prisoner who freed and liberated himself, and it is important to understand he was a jailhouse lawyer. In addition to that, he is a Black Panther, and we're not talking about that movie that's breaking all records. Brother Pinkney, your mic is open.
Thank you very much, Sister Betty Davis, Sister Professor Betty Davis. Thank you, Brother Ralph. And I have a few short words to say. There may be some folks who will be very angry at me this evening, but I'm going to say what I have to say.
Right.
I just hope they will listen to what I have to say, and they will do more than listen, but they will research. Okay. I frankly want to begin by the way I always begin. And that is to say, free our political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Free our political prisoners in the United States of America. Free them. Free them now. If we're not about that, then please, just get out of my face, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
So, the next thing I have to say is that, you know, I'm not about Trump. I'm not about Trump. I'm against the system. And I've been saying this for many, many, many decades. The system. But we get caught up in the cult of the personality, don't we? It's Trump today. Tomorrow it'll be somebody else. Day before that it was somebody else. Enough. When will we grow up? When? Okay? When will we grow up? It is a systemic sickness. Whatever you want to call it, it is a systemic sickness. And that is what we should be addressing. I am sick and tired of the so-called Democrats. I am sick and tired of their rhetoric. I have seen Barack Hussein Obama, who pimped, bamboozled, and used the people over and over again. They said, and you know, folks said to me, oh, he black? He black? Excuse me? I don't give a rat's petunia whether he was black, you know, turquoise, or Martian. We are talking about everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. And we need to be dealing with that. And our political prisoners are languishing in prisons for many, many decades as a result of our non resolve. I repeat, non-resolve to free them. All right? And that's where I'm going to go. Now, I just want to read to you, and I want to thank Sister Professor Betty Davis. She reminded me, because I get a lot of emails from Leonard Peltier's, Brother Leonard Peltier's, what do I call it? His emails, all right? His organization. And I happen to love Leonard. You say, oh, yeah, you love all political prisoners. Well, I happen to know that political prisoner called Leonard Peltier. I happen to have been in prison, at Ocala prison, with Leonard Peltier. You know, at Ocala prison, they had the so-called general population, and Sister Ann Lamb, I know you know what I'm talking about. They had the general population, then they had maximum security, then they had what they called supermax, all right? I happen to have had the honor, and I repeat, the honor of being in supermax with none other than my dear brother, Leonard Peltier, an indigenous native person who has fought not only for the rights of indigenous people, but for all of us. Until we understand that, we are in deep doo-doo. He fought for all of us. Yes, he began with his people, as well he should have. I began with black people as a former, how can I say former? Once a Panther, always a Panther. As a veteran of the Black Panther Party, I began with black people. But I didn't end there because that's what the struggle is about. We begin at where we began and we carry on. So I just want to say, free our political prisoners and all power to the people. Now, thanks to a reminder that I got from Sister Professor Betty Davis, I want to read a short poem by Leonard Peltier. You know, I remember when Leonard and I were in Supermax, we happened to have had the same lawyers, as if that makes any difference. But anyway, we were in Ocala prison in Supermax, and Leonard wrote a poem. It was actually after that time, but Leonard wrote a poem called Silence Screams. I repeat, the name of the poem is Silence Screams. For you all, please, I beg, I implore you to listen to it. Silence Screams. Leonard said, and I quote, the message, silence, they say, is the voice of complicity. But silence is impossible. Silence screams. Silence is a message. It goes on to say, just as doing nothing is an act, let who you are ring out and resonate in every word indeed. Yes. Become who you are. There is no, I repeat, there is no sidestepping your own being or your own responsibility. Wow. Not done yet. He goes on to say, what you do is who you are. I repeat, what you do is who you are. You are your own. Your own. Okay? Corner piece. You are yourself. You are your own. You become your own message. You are the message. He ends by saying, in the spirit of Crazy Horse, Leonard Peltier, All power to the people. You know, I think that sometimes...
Thank you, Larry. Wonderful. Thank you. That was really moving.
And if
Thank
I
you.
Can add, some 70 years ago, my mother said to me, "We all are what we do." And so Leonard's message is clear with many people, and it has been clear. The only question is, can we raise people's consciousness to the level of doing something? I'll turn it back to Sister Betty.
All right. Brother Larry, can you tell them where they can find that poem?
Yes. Go on Dissident Voice, which is a website, Dissident Voice, and just put in Leonard Peltier, Silent Screams. The name of the poem is Silent Screams. It's on Dissident Voice. It will make you strong. It will make you cry, but you will, I'm sure you will, absolutely everyone will go, "Yes, that is me."
Brother Larry, we can't wait till next week to hear the next poem. Without further ado, we have a call-in from way out west. Brother Reverend Pinckney, another political prisoner who freed himself, the only person I know to go to jail for quoting the Bible, for starting a referendum. Brother Reverend Pinckney, your mic is open.
Well, thank you there, Betty. I want to thank you so much for having me, you and Ralph and Larry. That was really a moving poem. And I mean, it's just an honor to be here on your show today. And I won't take up much of your time, but I'm excited today. You know, I know most people know about my new church and my new school that I have here in the city of Benton Harbor. And it's a tremendous building. Matter of fact, it's the biggest church in Benton Harbor. Also comes along with the biggest school. But I've been going to, I was on a speaking tour all through California from L.A. I went to L.A., I went to Pasadena, I went to San Pietro, I went to Merced, and I went to the University of California, Merced, L.A. I went to all Berkeley, I went to all the universities speaking to all the people, and I was gone for 12 exciting days telling people about political prisoners, letting them know what we can do and how we can help them. To me, it's something that we have to get into. We got to start moving self out the way and allow people to help, because there's people out there who really want to help. And I want to say something. Donald Trump, you know, people give him the bad lip, but he's one of the greatest organizers I have ever seen in my life. I have never known people to come from all over to want to hear me speak. And matter of fact, he got people stacked on top of each other trying to figure out a way how we going to get rid of this man. But I tell you, he's an organizer. He's the greatest organizer I have ever met. And I really appreciate Donald Trump. You may not appreciate him, but I appreciate him. Because I tell you, the crowds at the universities and everything was stacked to the T. You couldn't squeeze another person in there. And my whole conversation is about the billionaires. You know, I tell them, you got 400 billionaires in this country. I mean, well, 400 billionaires making $97,000 an hour. And they don't want to even give $15 an hour to some of these people that's working. That is the most, I mean, who would believe such a thing? But unfortunately, people accept it. When you accept things, you're saying everything is all right. Things are not all right. Things are not all right. And we got to let the people know. And we got to rally, we got to talk to the people. One of the things I did while I was there, I passed out literature. And I showed people the issues where they can go look up stuff, and I tell you, them students, they was more excited. I got to thank Donald Trump for it. I can't say it because of Reverend Pinckney. I can't say that. I can't say it because I'm a political prisoner or I was a political prisoner, I got to say it because of Donald Trump. He's organizing for me, and I appreciate it. So those of you who are out there, this is the greatest opportunity you ever going to have to get out there and do things, because you got the greatest organizer in the world organizing for you. So we can do what we have to do. Let's bring the people together any way that we can. Let's do it. You know, we got to move self out the way. It's not about you. It's not about you. It's all about the people. And everybody can be a leader. Just go out there and do it. That's all I have to say.
Thank you so much for that, Reverend Pinckney. And I must say, in that school and church, we must visit. I'm talking to Sister Betty. We have to work it out because we've already made a commitment, a minor commitment to putting that roof on, and we're going to keep it. And people have to keep their commitments to this movement and everyone in it. And
absolutely.
Together.
And Ralph, don't forget May 26th, Occupy the PGA, where we're going to be teaching inside the school. We're going to show people how to go out and be real activists and talk about it and talk to other people. So inside the building and in the school itself, you know, we're going to have classrooms and everything on that day, May 26th, when we do our Occupy the PGA, our mass demonstration. We're ready and we're prepared and we're doing things right now to get ourselves prepared for that moment.
Well, Reverend Pinckney, I'm going to have to ask you not to tell people, not to warn them about Ralph from New York. I want
Ralph. Ralph, they know. They was talking about you the other day.
I hope it was positive.
And with absolutely, that, the guy from Fresno. I went to Fresno too, and he was telling about, where is that guy at? The one that almost got us all beat up and put in jail by the police. I said, no, they wasn't putting nobody in jail, not that day. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was true.
I want to say thank you for calling in. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
And we want you to remind people that Black is Back is having a conference, and you are one of the featured speakers, April 7th through April 8th in St. Louis, Missouri. And we're hoping that they will come out so you can teach them how to do a referendum.
Absolutely. I will be there.
Different community positions. So
mm-hmm.
Reverend Edward Pinckney is one of the featured speakers along with Brother Ralph. And we're hoping everybody will turn out for the ballot and the bullet, the electoral school, Black is Back in St. Louis, Missouri. If you Google Black is Back, it'll come up. Without further ado, we want to go to Brother Tom, because he gave us some statistics, and it blew people's minds. Brother Tom, your mic is open, and Sister Ann, we need you to hang in there. Sister Gwen and Brother Tariq, hang in there. And Brother Rocco. Brother Tom, are you in the house? Okay. Sister Betty may have made a mistake here. Just hang in there with me. I hate to admit it, but I think I made a mistake. Let's just see. I went too fast. Okay. We're going to go to Brother Tariq, and then I'm going to see what my mistake is. He was on the line. So, Brother Tariq, we're going to open up your mic, and I'm going to see. Maybe I clicked Tom off in my haste. Brother Tariq, your mic is open. Hello, Brother Tariq?
Hello, I hear. Let's go to Sister Ann then. Open Ann's mic.
Sister Ann, your mic is open. We'll come back to Brother Tom and Brother Tariq. Oh, man. Hello? Hello, can you hear me? Hello? Okay, we're opening up all mics. If you can hear me, please speak up.
I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Vivia, I can hear you.
All right, Sister Ann, can you
Is
hear
Joe
us?
There?
Okay,
Sister
I was interrupted
Ann, can you
by
hear us
phone
now?
Calls. I can hear you now. I was interrupted by phone calls from prisoners, so.
Okay, then. Each Papa thing. Brother Joel is here, and we're going to go to Brother Joel, and then we'll try Brother Tariq again. I still see him, so I hope he's in the house. And we're going to research what happened with Brother Tom. Okay, go ahead, Sister Ann.
Okay, thank you much. I just got calls from both Seth and Jaleel. So, as you probably know, because I said it a few days ago, but everybody on the radio doesn't know. Once again, Robert Seth Hayes, number 74A2280, they have not provided the sensor for his insulin pump since February 23rd, which is insane to me. So I'm just going to read a little report that I wrote so people can go to jerichony.org, folk. You got to make these phone calls and write these letters. As people know, ensuring that Robert Seth Hayes receives adequate medical care has been an ongoing struggle over the past 20 years. Seth reports that when he went to change the sensor on his insulin pump, the sensors must be changed every 6 days. On February 23rd, he was informed that Sullivan did not have any sensors at the facility. So, ever since then, which is more than 2 weeks now, right, Seth does not have a continuous glucose monitoring device. The sensor continually reads interstitial glucose levels and relays them to the monitor, and he's had to rely on his daily finger sticks to determine his sugar levels. Once again, New York State Docs is violating Seth's constitutional and human right to adequate health care, in addition to being in stark violation of the United Nations Mandela Rules on the treatment of prisoners. The whole point of Seth's having the insulin pump monitor is because he can no longer tell when his sugars are high or low. It is hard to believe that quote-unquote medical personnel at Sullivan have once again failed to order the necessary sensors in a timely fashion. Please call, write, and fax the following people to demand that all supplies for Robert Seth Hayes, number 74A2280's insulin pump, be adequately stocked at the Sullivan Clinic. Be polite but firm. Feel free to email newyorkcityjericho@gmail.com to let us know what response you receive. Staff at Sullivan usually state that Superintendent Keyser will not take phone calls and that all complaints must be in writing. If that is the case, ask to speak with guidance and ask for Seth's counselor. So we want people to call the chief medical officer, Carl J. Konigsman, M.D., and he has a phone and a fax and an email. I discourage emails because they're so easy to ignore. Phone a man. Write a letter, fax it to him, clog up his fax machine, and then take that letter and put it in the mail with a stamp. Do the same thing with Anucci. And Superintendent Keyser, call, and then also write to the superintendent and just say this is unconscionable, you know. So this is serious, you know, once again with Seth. As I said last week, Reverend Joy Powell is also in dire straits. That is still continuing. I just got a letter from her. So that's also right below the campaign for Seth. Make those calls as well, please. You know, it's really important. She's not supposed to be in the SHU. She's a senior citizen with health issues. There's a whole, you know, safeguarding thing about that. They're not supposed to be putting senior citizens with health issues in the SHU. And she's been in the SHU just because she was reporting on the horrible conditions at Bedford Hills. So we have two prisoners right now in a medical crises. They both have diabetes. They're both not receiving adequate care. Being in the SHU with diabetes is probably the worst place you could possibly be, you know, being thrown in a hole. So real serious stuff here, folk. And I agree with what Larry Pinckney was saying before. We must free all political prisoners. That is what we are all about. And we also hope to see everybody on Saturday, March 24th at the Holy Root Episcopal Church. We are celebrating our 20th anniversary. It should be a great program. We have our national co-chair to speak. We have Pam Africa to speak. We will have some other speakers who we have not announced yet because we're awaiting confirmation. We have the Mahina movement. We have Baba Ngoma. So we have culture. We'll have, you know, people. We'll have some food earlier. And I would encourage everybody to come out to that. We have a Facebook event page. It's all also right on jerichony.org. Just go to the first page. But really, people, please make those phone calls and those letters for help and for Joy Powell, because they really depend on us. You know, it is true what my friend Ben Ramos always says. People free political prisoners. Yes, we do. And we also save their lives. If it wasn't for us making those phone calls, Seth probably would have been dead a long time ago. And he himself says that. So, you know, it's really important. He was talking to him today. He was very upset. His sugars are up in the 500s again. Nobody knows why. You know, it's not because of what he's eating or not eating. He's very careful about what he does eat and doesn't eat. So,
thank you,
you know,
again for that, Ann.
Thank you.
Every time I hear someone talk about the law, I remember Lynn Stewart's statement.
Yeah.
The law is ever they say it is at any given time. And my own statement is, no American law or declaration of freedom or justice has applied people of color. And so let's keep that in mind, and back to Sister Betty.
Tom, I understand you're with us now. Please proceed.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Good. I would like to comment about Brother Ralph at the beginning of the program indicated that that most people still believe in this political and economic system are taken in by it. However, if we look at the recent national elections, only 50% or less of the electorate even bother to vote. And it's not because they're lazy. Is because they think that the political system is rigged, is a sham. And the recent mayoral election was a perfect example of that. Brother Ralph asked me to put out these figures. Now, de Blasio he ran against two candidates, a Republican and an independent, a cop that was managed to become very wealthy through investments. Neither one of those candidates had any program whatsoever. One would expect de Blasio, the incumbent, to easily win. And he did get 60% of the vote. However, what the mass media didn't point out is that only 20% of the electorate bothered to vote. So what is 20% of 60%? It's 12%. De Blasio got elected by 12%. Even the media, even though the media is characterizing this as a landslide for de Blasio. Mm-hmm. Now, I would like to quote some excerpts from a famous scientist who talks about capitalism and socialism. He starts with saying that the so-called civilized human history has been largely influenced by causes which are by no means exclusively economic. For example, most of the major states of history owe their existence to conquest. The conquering peoples established themselves as the privileged class of the conquered country. They seized for themselves a monopoly of the land ownership and appointed a priesthood. These priests, in control of education, made the class division of society into a permanent institution and created a system of values by which the people unconsciously were guided in their behavior. And then he goes on to say that socialism is directed toward a social, ethical end. Science, however, cannot create ends and even less instill them in human beings. Science at most can supply the means by which certain to attain certain ends.
What?
We should be on the guard not to overestimate science and scientific methods when it is a question of human problems. And we should not assume that experts are the only ones who have a right to express themselves on questions affecting the organization of society. Many voices have been asserting for some time now that human society is passing through a crisis, that its stability has been gravely shattered. It is characteristic of such a situation that individuals feel indifferent or even hostile toward the group, small or large, to which they belong. In order to illustrate my meaning, let me record here a personal experience I recently had with an intelligent and well-disposed man about the threat of another war which would endanger the existence of mankind. This man very calmly and coolly said to me, quote, "Why are you so deeply opposed to the disappearance of the human race?" I am sure that as little as a century ago, no one would have made a statement of this kind. It is the statement of a man who has striven in vain to attain an equilibrium within himself and has lost hope. It is the expression of a painful solitude and isolation from which so many people are suffering these days. Mankind is a social being and a solitary being. Now, it is evident that the dependence of the individual upon society is a fact of nature and cannot be denied, just as in the case of ants and bees. However, while the whole life process of ants and bees are fixed down to the smallest detail by hereditary instinct, the social pattern of human beings are variable and susceptible to change. I have now reached the point, what to me constitutes the essence of the crisis of our time. It concerns the relationship of the individual with society. The individual has become more conscious than ever of his dependence upon society, but he does not experience this dependence as a positive asset. And to now I want to just end this by saying that quote, "I am convinced that there is only one way to eliminate these grave evils, namely through the establishment of a socialized economy accompanied by an educational system which would be oriented towards social goals. In such an economy, the means of production are owned by society. A planned economy which adjusts production to the needs of the community would distribute the work to be done among all those able to work and would guarantee a livelihood to everyone. And the education of the individual, in addition to promoting his own innate abilities, would develop in him a sense of responsibility for his fellow men in place of the glorification of power and success in our present society." Now, I want you to know, this is a famous scientist that wrote this. And who was he? He wrote this in 1949. And the name of the scientist was Albert Einstein.
Einstein.
Yes, we all know and love Albert Einstein for that and for his relationship with the human being Paul Robeson, who acted on these social philosophies. And that is a philosophical viewpoint opposite of the nihilistic state of affairs in the minds of people in America today, and our society has brought people to that element, to that level. I'll turn it over to Sister Betty.
Brother Tariq, are you back with us? Brother Tariq.
Hello?
Yes, good. We have you. Go ahead, Brother Tariq.
Yes, as I was saying, I'm back with you, I took a little hiatus. I was working on a project. As you know, I turned in a paper on that I intend to submit to the UN regarding what these people are doing to political prisoners. So I dealt with that. And the other issue I dealt with was the matter of the Black Panther movie. As you know, some of us went to the various movies and we gave out information to let people know that there are real Black Panthers and that those real Black Panthers, especially our prisoners of war, are our superheroes and they should be regarded as such and every effort should be made to liberate them. So I'm happy to be back with you. I see the issue you're talking about, you say, was the matter of trade. Is that aluminum and the steel issue? Was that with you, our issue tonight?
Yes,
okay.
Spoke on that. It'd be whatever you feel that is important in people's lives.
Okay, well, what I feel is important in people's lives is that Black Panther movie, you know, the fact that the intelligence community seized on that movie and are using it as a vehicle for brainwashing. And the sad part, the especially sad part is that the intelligence community has seized on it to use it as a brainwashing vehicle, and they're directing it at our children because, as you know, the greater fan of the Marvel comic books is children, although adults have been following it since they were children, but most of the readership is children. You know, so whatever brainwashing that is going on is directed at our children, you know, and so that's very bad. We have in that movie, we have the partnering of the Black Panther character with a CIA agent. Now, I'm sure the children accepted that with no problem at all because they are uninformed people, but we adults know that there is no partnership between the CIA and the people, no matter who they are, Black Panther or whatever, because of the intelligence community, they head up the campaign to oppress and exploit the people. And the intelligence community, especially the CIA, they head up the campaign to carry out genocide against Black people. Also in that movie, there was a dichotomy of dialogue. And what I mean is when we dichotomize something, we separated into two groups, one good, one bad, and their dialogue was a dichotomized dialogue, which is to say that they sometimes start out good and end up bad, or they start out bad and end up good. And I'm sure that went way past the children, and they accepted that without problem. But for us adults, I think we found that to be very frustrating. And then there were scenes where the characters were desecrated many of the things that we hold sacred. As you know, there's one character who killed two women, and then he tried to choke out another woman. Certainly, we hold women to be sacred, and he desecrated that concept. And then he also desecrated the concept of fratricide, which is something that we discouraged from happening within the group. But that picture is replete with fratricidal instances. Uncles killing nephews, cousins killing each other, and I thought that was very bad. And then this purple thing, a vibranium, I think it was, that they held sacred, they violated that, so we have that in the movie too. And then we have the matter of training by association, and this is especially a brainwashing technique when one of the characters shot the Black woman and killed her. When the viewer is outraged and saddened at this man killing a woman, especially unnecessarily, so that engenders feelings of sadness and outrage. But before those feelings can subside, he kills a racist. And what happens is because these feelings have not subsided, we take these feelings over to the killing of this racist who should be killed. But that has the effect us not wanting to do what we should do to this racist person. So that is known as training by association. So that scene was in the movie, and that was a bad thing. Then we had a couple of characters who talking about they wanted to build an empire, and one guy said he wanted to build an empire that the sun never set on. And as you know, the British had an empire that the sun never set on, and empires are about killing people or letting people die. So when they talk about building an empire, that dissuade our people, especially our children, from wanting to fight for change, because they say the change that they're going to bring about is going to be the same situation that they are presently in. They are subjects of an empire. So I think that we should know that the real Black Panthers are the real superheroes, and they are superheroes because they fought to end this horrible world that we are being forced to live in, and they fought to bring about a peaceful and loving world. So we got to know who the real superheroes are. Real superheroes are our political prisoners and prisoners of war. So thank you on that issue.
Thank you for that. We're going to continue with this.
Let me just say this very quickly, if I may, to Brother Tariq. This is Larry speaking, brother. Thank you. Thank you. You are right on point, Brother Tariq.
Yep.
All power to the people. You are right
all
on
power.
Point. Thank you.
All power to the people. I love you all.
Is extensive involvement and interest by the public, and it must be examined, and we can examine this future programs. This is the way we involve ourselves with the people, by explaining what is happening. Sister Betty.
Okay, guys, I'm feeling stressed here. We've got four other people who are waiting in the call, so be aware of that. I want to thank all of you tonight. You've been on point, and that's what this program is about. Brother Joel, your mic is open, and Sister Gwen, you're up next.
Okay. Is Joel first?
Yes, Joel, your mic is open, dear. Joel, are you there? Okay, Sister Gwen, we're going to open your mic so that you can participate. And we'll get to Joel. Go ahead, Gwen.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. Hi, Ralph and Betty. I just wanted to start out by thanking you for your service, for having the radio show, but also to be teachers in the public school system. I was thinking today after I talked to Ralph what a cool teacher he would have been, and thinking about Betty as a principal was really an amazing thing. And I guess what I have to talk about tonight is just really an update on the church situation I was telling you about. And I know a lot of people in the left movement, many, you know, are not churchgoers. I belong to a church that I thought had good instincts, good. I don't know. I thought their roots were good, but. I found out since we've hired a new minister that things are really evil and pretty corrupt. And I know this about most churches, believe me. But I think this one really takes my breath away. And this takes my breath away because it stinks so bad. We have a new woman minister at our church who has also gotten very, very involved. Like a catapult into the immigrant fight, the immigrant struggle. And, you know, she at the same time fired another minister publicly 3 weeks ago in front of 29 people at the church. And after she fired him, who, by the way, is an immigrant, he's from Ecuador himself. After she fired him, then she told him to leave, and I told him not to leave. And when he didn't, she said, call the police on him. Well, thank God nobody did call the police, but why we were there that day was to also hear about the budget. And when I found out that our church, Park Avenue Church, which is affiliated with the Disciples of Christ, had sold the property next door for $25 million and were now going to be owners of second most expensive apartments in New York City, I was not only astounded, but I also found out that we invested $17 million in UBS of Wall Street. Now, UBS is a money laundering deal, and I can't think of too many things on Wall Street that have any redeeming value. But it is the height of hypocrisy when a church takes their money and decides to throw it into the coffers of UBS Bank. So this has really had me reeling for a couple weeks, and I finally decided to call. I called the bishop of the church yesterday, and, you know, I felt like kind of like a little kid when I was talking to him. You know how a principal, you kind of think a principal is going to come through for you, but, you know, he doesn't do it at the end for these kids that are bullied. And as I was talking to him on the phone, first I questioned whether or not he could help me because he was relatively new and he took offense at that. But we got into the conversation, and as I told him the things that were disturbing me, you know, first firing somebody publicly and humiliating them and then calling the police, and then, you know, the church taking this astounding amount of money and investing it in one of the dirtiest Wall Street firms there is. And, you know, I just said to him, I said, I just can't really see how this correlates with Christ's teachings. You know, like, do you remember the story about Christ turning over the money changers? And I said, frankly, I said, I think that when you come to the table like this, you're coming to the table with dirty hands. And I said, I think you have an obligation to tell people that are coming to your church that you are the Church of Wall Street, that you are coming to the table with the dirt of Wall Street on your hands. And I think you have an equal obligation to identify your ministers that are coming to work in these projects with a lot of sincere activists, that they too are coming to the table with very dirty hands. And I reminded him it takes many people, millions of people, to fight Wall Street at places like Occupy Wall Street. And people like myself go down with not very much money. And I reminded him again that what you want to, all you need to be an activist is a big mouth and 2 feet that work good. You don't need $25 million to fight the good fight. And, you know, I then asked him, you know, what did he feel? And he just said to me, well, it's a lot to unpack. It's a lot to unpack. And I said, so you're going to continue with the leadership as it is? And he said, yes, we're going to continue this way. You know, this is pretty much his intention. And that I asked him how he felt, if he thought that what they were doing with this church was in line with the teaching of Christ. And he said, I can't really comment, you know. And of course he couldn't really comment because it's totally opposite of each other. If anything, as I said before, you know, probably Christ was our first communist, and he was a hippie radical Jew. He got the death penalty. Now, why do I go back to this, the teachings of Christ? I'm going back there because I think that he himself was an activist, and I see the purity in so many activists of going out and doing the boots on the ground and the heavy lifting and the stuff that gets you hurt and thrown in jail. And this is, I really think, what our mission in life should be. It should be to go out there and get the work done. And we also need to be very careful of who we're aligning ourselves with. I do not want to align myself with somebody who's shoveling the coal of Wall Street into that furnace. In other words, shoveling money into that furnace to make them richer and richer and then coming out and pretending they're an activist. I don't think so. The woman that is our reverend is Reverend Kaji Doja, and I think that she needs to be identified when she goes out. If you're okay with getting down with somebody who is not walking the walk but talking the talk, that's fine. That's up to you. But I definitely think there should be transparency here, and we should know what churches are really up to and how much money they are taking and where they're giving their money to. I think that's very important when you're aligning yourself with different groups. And that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you so much for that, Gwen. And you have shown courage that Lynn Stewart speaks about all of the time. She spoke about the most difficult thing to do is to tell truth with the people who are closest to you. That is your family, your church, the people you are close to, and you have done that. And we are going to, that is encouraging to the rest of us to speak truth to our family and our friends and the people around us. Sister Betty.
Thank you. Joel, your mic is open. Do you want to give us a closing word? Brother Joel. Okay. Anyone who wants to chime in as we close down the program and want to throw out a few words?
Betty?
Yes.
Just one last thing I wanted to tell people about today regarding the teacher's strike. I wanted to tell people what they don't know, that yes, the strike was resolved, but the strike was resolved on the backs of the Medicaid recipients. So the money that is going to go pay those teachers, which they do deserve, is going to come out of the coffers of the very, very poor people on Medicaid, and I think that's absolutely wrong. And I also wanted to say myself that it was interesting to me that the teachers union did not get involved in this, and I wonder if they were just as well off not being involved with the teachers union. I found that my husband's union at the post office was very racist, so I'm glad to see it was more of a wildcat thing.
For me.
Whole round world to hear. I wish I could share.